Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Liberty Bigley podcast. And yeah, that's right. You heard that right. It is now the Liberty Bigley podcast. I have shed the name of the Liberty Weekly podcast. That is weekly as in W-E-A-K-L-Y, because the name confusion with the Liberty Weekly podcast being the A-side podcast, whereas this podcast, the Liberty Bigley podcast, I had to catch myself there, is now the B-side podcast for recordings that I think were a little more off the cuff and did not fit, let's say the pedigree of the A-side podcast. So this one is a little bit more fun. The production time, as I mentioned in episodes, is way lower, and I can feel a little more free to shift from topic to topic. That includes topics outside of libertarianism, which the last few have been about libertarianism, but I reserve the right to talk about whatever the hell I want to talk about on this podcast. Maybe a bit more of a journal, a mental or verbal journal of sorts, which is fitting for me because I've realized in the past few months, well, the past couple of years since I started the show, is that I'm a verbal thinker, and that's just kind of the way that I pick things apart and process things. So disclaimer, that kind of means that sometimes ideas come out half-baked, and that's just the nature of the business here. So we're going to continue on today. Updating too is that there are new URLs for this show. That would be anchor.fm/LibertyBigley. Liberty spelled the regular way and Bigley, B-I-G-L-Y. And I think that just makes so much more sense now. It can still be found where regular podcasts, fine podcasts are distributed all over the place. I'm still trying to find a home for it on libertyweekly.net, but I'll just direct you there for the A-side podcast, which has a lot of my better work, better in quotations. But I am becoming fond of these episodes, even though there are about 14 listeners right now, and that's fine. I haven't really advertised it very well on the A-side podcast, the Liberty Weekly podcast. So hopefully that audience will grow, but I'm relying on you. You are the stalwarts of the Liberty Weekly brand, listening to the deep tracks here. You are close to my heart, and there are things here that I do not talk about on the A-side podcast. I'm a little more personal in this one. There's a lot of patrons that listen to this show, a lot of my buddies in Discord, where I'm building a community around the Liberty Weekly brand, as well as now reddit.com/r/LibertyWeekly. There's a community with two members in it right now, maybe three, hoping that you will join that there. So I'll plug all the regular plugs later on, but not that it does much good, because you are the elite. You are the vanguard of the Liberty Weekly audience right now. I really appreciate you listening to this show. And this, like I said, allows me to turn over episodes really fast. And so maybe I might even knock two out tonight. Who knows? I'm feeling pretty ambitious here. So again, using the anchor.fm app and all the associated URLs for that really makes it convenient. Today I'm going to be talking about an article appearing in Lou Rockwell's The Left, the Right, and the State. And I have the paper, or the hardcover edition. I won't include a picture because that will take too much editing time. However, I got it off of, it is a Mises, I think it might be a Mises publication. I got it from Amazon. Yeah, it is a Mises publication here. It's a hardcover edition. It has kind of a tan cover with the left, the right, and the state is in maroon lettering on the front. It's a very simple cover, so you can maybe find it. Perhaps I'll include a link in the show notes page, an Amazon affiliate link here for you. This is chapter 5, entitled Declaration Confusion, the fifth section. So, Declaration Confusion, I have to say, so I did hear that originally I heard from the artist formerly known as Mance Rayder, and I will refer to him in that light from now on, but I have heard from him, and it was in our interview that Keith and I did with him about, after we reviewed his meme books, we invited him on the show just to kind of do our favorite book selections, and this was one of his selections, The Left, the Right, and the State. And I have to say that based off of what he said, I was kind of expecting a more scholarly work in terms of chapters that were well thought out, and this was like a screed against the state. However, this is a collection of Lou's articles, and this doesn't detract from the value of what the writing is, but this is a collection of Lou's articles, it seems, that appeared throughout the decades on lourockwell.com, which is a very popular and famous, perhaps infamous in certain circles, website that Lou Rockwell ran for decades, championing, that doesn't sound right when I say it, championing the Rothbardian brand. Lou Rockwell is the founder of the Mises Institute, but championing the Mises Institute brand. And Lou Rockwell, as maybe a lot of you know, he's more of a right-leaning figure, culturally right, perhaps, but he is an ANCAP through and through. And so the fact that these are articles that he wrote, I guess maybe in my mind, I was expecting something different. I guess it doesn't detract too much so from the actual content of it or the message. However, I was expecting a bit more footnotes. And I haven't seen too many footnotes. Maybe I was expecting more scholarly work instead of, articles that you would just read over your morning coffee or over lunch or whatnot. But this is the fifth one, called entitled Declaration Confusion. It came out in July of 2000, and it really hit up a lot of points that I brought up in the early Liberty Weekly podcast episodes. I'm thinking particularly about libertyweekly.net/2, the conspiratorial corruption of the Constitution, and similar works that I've done throughout the past, works that I've done for law school research papers and policy papers that I've done. And I'm going to read this paragraph by paragraph, because anyone from the Mises Institute should not knock me for copyright violations, although this is a comment. It's probably a fair use, a comment on a work transformative in nature. However, IP is theft, so let's go here. First paragraph. Every July, Americans commence the annual national ritual of noticing that the Declaration of Independence is among the, quote, founding documents that gave birth to this country. And pundits, following innumerable scholars for 150 years, will twist and mangle the text to discern some other meaning from the document besides the obvious one. And as we'll see going forwards here, this is no longer me reading, but as we'll see going forwards, I really do appreciate the Declaration of Independence even more so than the Constitution, for obvious reasons that I have covered before in the podcast. I'm thinking libertyweekly.net, I think, /29, which would be my own version of Lysander Spooner's the Constitution of No Authority. That would be it. So I believe that's the one, but go look that up. Maybe I'll include it in the show notes page if I'm not feeling too lazy. So yes, the Declaration of Independence, way more important than the Constitution, penned by Thomas Jefferson, if memory serves me correctly. It is the ideological backstop behind the idea of secession, behind the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, which I have written about, and you'll get my paper on it from signing up for the email list at libertyweekly.net/email there. You get my take on it. Tom Woods has really talked about secession and the nullification papers, Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, but the Declaration of Independence directly implies the ability of anybody to secede from a greater political unit. And this is what people really get wrong, and hence the title, Declaration Confusion. He continues, in most parts of the world, the Declaration is understood as a bold announcement and explanation with an underlying rationale of why the British government needed to be thrown off in an act of American secession. That's why the Eastern Europeans, throwing off Soviet tyranny, used it as their charter and moral mandate. But right here at home, the Declaration has few real friends. Those who invoke it do so by explaining it as something else. The industry of twisting the Declaration's clear meaning began only a few years after it was written, as the Federalist camp worked to treat it as a mandate for forming a new central government. I've talked about this quite a bit, that even soon after the Declaration was written and after the Constitution was drafted, the Bill of Rights went in the toilet. And I kind of brought this up in my the episode before the last episode on this podcast about Julian Assange and the Sedition Acts. So the Sedition Acts are a very interesting chapter of American history that you will know a bit about by listening to the second episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast, libertyweekly.net/2, but also that episode on Julian Assange that I just recorded. But I'd like to detract a little bit from the statements I made in that Julian Assange episode by saying that our Bill of Rights has always been mortally flawed from the beginning. I want to walk that back and saying that maybe perhaps the Bill of Rights was, but generally speaking, I don't think it could be argued that we are that we were never as free as we thought. Just de facto back in the day, the federal government was very small, as we will see through the rest of this article that I'm reading here. But we'll also see that de facto, the government just could not govern people and take away people's liberties the way that they can do so now. So I'd say maybe from a symbolistic point of view, perhaps from that point of view, perhaps back in the day, the Bill of Rights was flawed. You have the Sedition Act. It is a very serious violation of the First Amendment. But, you know, de facto, yes, we were a lot more free back then, and a lot in terms of our money, in terms of all these regulations and the nanny state, yada, yada, yada. I don't think anyone could seriously argue the point that we're not. And I wanted to clarify that from my previous episode, but also kind of explore this article because I've been reading this book and evoked a lot of thoughts on my end. Those who invoke the Declaration do so by explaining it as something else. The industry of twisting the Declaration's clear meaning began only a few years after it was written. As the Federalist camp worked to treat it as a mandate for forming a new central government, the Anti-Federalists, especially Patrick Henry, regarded the Constitution as a step away from the ideals articulated by Jefferson. Why? The Declaration threw off a powerful central government. 11 years later, the Constitution formed one. Indeed, Jefferson himself was no great enthusiast for the Constitution. Jefferson is my favorite founding father, followed maybe by Patrick Henry, maybe Henry even a little more so, but not having kind of the mystique around him as Jefferson or becoming president. Maybe that was Jefferson's flaw, was becoming president. I digress. It was written in his absence, Jefferson's absence, and he only acceded to it on the assumption that the states could escape the Union if they chose and the Constitution be amended if the new government threatened to become despotic. It turned out that the first large-scale test of his wish in 1860, guess what happened then, came only after the central government had accumulated enough power to annul the Declaration itself. Federalist distortions were nothing compared with the brazen misrepresentations pushed by President Lincoln. In his hands, the Declaration became nothing more than an affirmation of the equality of all men. It was a rhetorical tactic designed to counter the view held by most people in the South that their secession was nothing but a renewal of the original spirit of the Declaration. Just as the American revolutionaries threw off the British yoke, the South would throw off the Northern one. Now, yeah, this people have generally just lost what the spirit of the Declaration of Independence and even maybe the Constitution means. That's very clear, I think, nowadays, certainly. So how could Lincoln promote the Declaration while crushing the right to self-government? There is no better way to counter your opponent's best argument than by taking it up yourself on behalf of a contrary cause, kind of like a straw man argument. Today, this is called triangulation, and it worked as well in the 19th century as it has in the Clinton years. Clinton frequently decried the big government programs of the Republicans, even as he pushed big government programming himself. He even, shudder, invokes the name of Jefferson. And this was written in 2000, just to reiterate. The distortions have grown worse as the years have progressed. One faction of the radical left interprets the Declaration as a pre-Marxian revolutionary statement. Another faction treats it as a fraud perpetuated by business elites concerned only for profits. The soft left touts the material in the document about equality. American Tories decry the Declaration's invocations of universal abstractions like basic rights, while Straussian neoconservatives see it as a mandate for civil rights and global militarism. So I think that there is some truth to the fact that business elites concerned only for profits touted the Declaration of Independence. But more so, I think that elites concerned only by profits was more what resulted in the Constitution itself. I do believe the Constitution was a silent coup d'etat, and that was Rothbard's position as well. I think the position taken by the Dangerous History podcast as well. And I've learned a whole lot about the Declaration of about the founding years or the revolution from the Dangerous History podcast with Prof. CJ. I would check that out if y'all haven't already. Perhaps I'll include a show note in the notes below. I think it's profcj.org, profcj.org, if memory serves me correctly. So if I don't put the link in the show notes page, check that out through that URL. Lou says, thank goodness we still have the text itself of the Declaration. So here's the text itself. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Just an aside, man, what is his name? He was on Dave Smith's show, and he was Thaddeus Russell. He has his episode, The Unregistered with Thaddeus Russell. That's right. He was on Dave Smith's show and he completely botched this clause of the Declaration of Independence, suggesting that clearly this notion that all men are created equal, that they are endowed with certain unalienable rights, is a laughable concept because some men are tall and some men are short. And obviously the tall men are better at basketball than the short men. And this is just a complete misunderstanding and conflagration of what is exactly being said in the Declaration. There's a notion that all men are created equal, and we'll see what Lou says soon after, but all men are created equal in that some men don't have certain rights above others to rule over others. That's not what he's saying, or that's not what Jefferson is saying, and it seems like Thaddeus Russell laughably got it wrong in the Dave Smith episode the last time he was on, saying that Jefferson was terribly wrong to say this. He just doesn't get it. If that is in fact his true understanding, Thaddeus Russell's true understanding, I could be wrong. I don't know if he was trolling or not, because it's so wrong, that take. And it kind of makes me hesitant to glean any other information from Thaddeus Russell because of that horrible take, if that was his take. So that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So, not a perfect articulation of the ANCAP position, but perhaps a good articulation of the minarchist position, the classical liberal position, maybe to be more accurate. So, not the worst, but not the best either. And Lou continues, thus we see that the invocation of equality serves a specific purpose. It underscores the point that no man has a mandate from God to rule over other men. That is why a king, even if his name is Lincoln or Clinton or Bush, is not a superior moral agent with rights over the people apart from their consent. No man is endowed with rights superior to anyone else. That is the original American credo. Next, we find that government's power is not prior to the people. Its powers are only just when the people institute the government and continue to consent to those powers. When government becomes the enemy of rights, it can be tossed out. Rights are permanent, intrinsic features of men, all men. Governments are expedients that can come and go according to the people's wish. Rights cannot be altered or abolished. Governments can. When? When a long train, and this is the declaration again, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Thus, we find that throwing off government is not only an option, it can also be a positive moral duty. Indeed, Jefferson, the author of the Declaration, thought that government should be abolished from time to time just for, page turn, just for good measure. He wrote to Abigail Adams just before the Constitution was ratified, quote, "The spirit of resistance to government is so valuable on certain occasions that I wish it to be always kept alive." He sympathized with the people, not the government, during Shays' rebellion, and said, "God forbid we should ever be 20 years without such rebellion." That is awesome. Reading on in the Declaration, we find an enormous amount of complaints that revolve around economic issues, taxes, tariffs, revenue investigations, and the like. The British are accused of, quote, "cutting off our trade with all parts of the world," tariffs, perhaps, "and imposing taxes on us without our consent." I'm thinking of modern parallels of tariffs with Trump and everything. "This fact has caused the revisionists on the left to claim that this glorified revolt was nothing other than a fit thrown by the property class. There's a kernel of truth here. Economic liberty and property rights in particular are the foundation of all other liberties. If people are not secure in their earnings and enterprises, there can be no liberty at all, a point obliterated by the ACLU. Other debunkers point out that the infringements against economic liberty were minor, especially as compared with today. But that fact only underscores the point that Jefferson was right. We need more and not fewer revolutions. But why did Jefferson say we have rights to, quote, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, rather than use the Lockean phrase life, liberty, and property? As Murray N. Rothbard points out in Conceived in Liberty, Jefferson was compressing George Mason's sentence from the Virginia Declaration of Rights, which said that among man's natural rights are the enjoyment of life, liberty, and property, with the means of acquiring the possession and of acquiring and possessing property and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. There is no, quote, pursuit of happiness without property rights. This is a point made by Milton Friedman, amongst so many others. Also in the text we find, and I'm thinking of capitalism and freedom, maybe a link in the show notes page. Again, if I get around to it, just search it on Amazon. Also in the text, we find an impassioned hatred of the central government's military and police as instruments of tyranny. The British are accused of quartering troops without the people's permission, of making the military power separate from and superior to the civilian power, and of using, quote, large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny. But now that both left and right are in love with the military for domestic as well as foreign purposes, that's true, these attitudes have fallen completely out of favor with the pundit class. And this is funny that Lou Rockwell says both the left and the right have fallen in love with the military, because this was written in July 2000, before September 11th. Keep that in mind. So Jefferson, these attitudes have fallen completely out of favor with the pundit class. Jefferson biographer Dumas Malone is right that Jefferson's words should make tyranny tremble in any age. They have alarmed conservatives' minds at his own land in every generation. They have alarmed conservatives' minds in his own land in every generation, and some compatriots of his have regretted that the new republic was dedicated to such radical doctrines at its birth. Frank Shadorov was one of the few to write on the Declaration to get it right, so let's let him have the last word from his 1945 essay, Thomas Jefferson, Rebel. Quote, "It is not at all the charter of a new nation. It is a rationalization of rebellion. The indictment of the British crown was but a springboard from which Jefferson launched a political principle that government, far from being an end in itself, but an instrument invented by man to aid him in bettering his circumstances. And when that instrument fails to function properly, it is high time to kick it out. And which is most important, he meant any government, not only the particular one which at that time engaged his attention. Any government, any time. And with that, Lou Rockwell closes out his article, which is written in on July 4th. We have July 4th coming up, maybe jumping the gun on my part, but it is entitled Declaration Confusion. So that's a really good one. I have some other thoughts here that may be more suited to another episode, but it kind of revolves around, I'll pick this up, but it revolves around, there's a scene in the very beginning of The Patriot with Mel Gibson where they are, I believe he's in South Carolina. He goes to Charlestown and they are talking about whether or not to levy a militia to support the Continental Army. And they all kind of rely upon Mel Gibson's character, Benjamin, I forget his name. Benjamin Martin is his name. And they all kind of hold fast to his opinion. And he goes up to the convening of the state legislature, the assembly. And he does not support a levy. They put it up to a vote and the levy passes. But he does not support a levy, and he mentions that he is a man of principle. However, he does not have the luxury of affording principles because he has a family and children. And I wanted to reflect upon the call of the cause of liberty and the associated risk of putting your children at risk. And it's something I've been thinking a lot about lately, balancing those two interests, because you care about the safety of your family, and in some ways, it is your call to make, but in other ways, it is maybe not a risk that you should take for a personal conviction, personal principles. So it is embodied in that scene, and maybe I'll touch on that later. So maybe in the next podcast, but maybe also in an episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast proper, because I think it's a great kind of question to pick apart, and maybe I'll enlist a guest to help me unpack those ideas. Perhaps not. But as I'm finishing up this episode here, I really like where this episode went. So I might actually release it as an episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast. And it's refreshing that I don't have to make the distinction now between the Liberty Weekly podcast and the Liberty Bigly podcast. So once again, you can find the Liberty Bigly podcast at anchor.fm/Liberty Bigly. That's Bigly. As in Donald Trump, ha ha ha. And you can find that there. I hope that you enjoyed this one, especially if it's an episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast proper. Would really help to get more earballs on this. I think I'm putting out content that rivals the content on the primary podcast, maybe just a little less formal, a little more impromptu, a little more personal. So you know how to support the Liberty Weekly brand. That is at patreon.com/Liberty Weekly. Cody is the new producer. We are really looking for funds to help support him and his work for the podcast and help compensate him. We are capitalists here, the division of labor, but also believe in compensating for value added and subjective value and all that. So patreon.com/Liberty Weekly, you'll get extended cuts. You'll get my blooper reels and appearances on other shows and access to the meme cache and all the ebooks and all those benefits there. Amazon affiliate link, libertyweekly.net/Amazon. Do your regular Amazon shopping at no further cost to you. And also the email list at libertyweekly.net/email. And anything else that I'm forgetting, I apologize for. However, please join us next time, either the Liberty Weekly podcast or the Liberty Bigly podcast. That was Patrick McFarland signing out. Thank you so much for listening. Peace.